Now, we don't have much truck with cliche here on Blueprint for Living, but obviously the cliche when you talk about a chef is a rotund, portly person who loves sampling their own goods and has a surfeit of rage. Like, they just shout at people, they're angry, they're just not healthy, by and large. But something's happened. Something's changed. You look on TV and the portly chef seems to be a thing of the past. I don't know about you, but any of these celebrity cooking shows, the chefs seem to be just rapidly shrinking, getting ever smaller and more svelte. And I'm joined by two chefs at the pinnacle of their profession who are both physically spectacular specimens and I'm sure healthy in body and mind. Simon Bryant, you might remember from ABC's Cook and the Chef. He also used to be the chef at the Adelaide Hilton. And Toby Puttock, who worked at the River Cafe, set up 15 in London and Melbourne, and is the author of a new book called The Chef Gets Healthy. The subtitle is Lose the Kilos, Keep the Flavour. What is going wrong with our chefs? Why are they healthy of body and mind? Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Michael.
Hello.
Thank you both for joining me so much. Toby, I'm going to start with you because you've written a whole book on this idea of going healthy.
And there's healthy in the title of the book as well.
Uh-oh.
That's bad news. Now, that uh-oh, Simon, right from the off, you're sceptical about the idea of healthiness.
No, I'm not sceptical. I just, on my second cookbook release, Penguin Lantern wanted to use the word healthy, and I actually said no, and I don't know why. Because my book is just what I eat.
Yeah.
And I think Toby's a book I've got a copy of and I can see it's what he eats because his wife's giving him a hard time, yeah?
It's a bit of a buzzword these days. She gave me a really hard time, you know. I mean, it was on the edge there for a while. But I was working in the restaurant a lot, as chefs do, and on my off nights I wasn't really cooking salads and quinoa and all this kind of stuff. You know, we were getting takeaway pizza or something
really?
Like that. Well, I was tired. I was working all the time. And working in a kitchen, you're having generally what's on the restaurant menu as the owner, head chef. And then on your off night, you're probably not having something too healthy either. So generally, you're eating really awesome food that bloggers, Instagrammers would go nuts for, but not necessarily good for the belly. So,
jeez, I've never done that. I guess I'm a little lucky. I got a beautiful little veggie patch out the back.
You look horrified at me right now.
No, I guess maybe because I got to corporate chefing fairly early in my career, I had a huge brigade of 40 chefs. So I hadn't poop myself out on a hotline every night. So when I got home, I really wanted to cook.
But Toby, you made that deliberate choice that you wanted to get healthier, that you felt that you weren't quite doing it right. How hard was that to do? How did you go about it?
It was actually really hard at first. Basically, my wife was working out. She wanted to kind of get that 19-year-old body back, and I wanted her to as well. And who wouldn't? And I probably can't say that, but it's already there now, isn't it? Oh, well, let's move on.
Let's assume that you were saying she wanted you to get your 19-year-old body back rather than hers.
She still does. And anyway, so basically I was like, oh, okay, but I'm cooking the Mediterranean diet. And when we started to look into what I was cooking, we realized I wasn't cooking that at all. I was cooking rich restaurant food all the time. Delicious, loads of butter, olive oil, all the things we chefs use to make food taste brilliant. Not necessarily good for every night eating. So I started, I went to her trainer dietitian. We went through everything I was cooking at home. She was absolutely horrified. And so they gave me a quick short list, which you would already know I didn't at the time, of what you can eat all the time, what you shouldn't really eat if you want to lose weight, and what you can eat sometimes. And so Georgia also started giving me a few books written by dietitians and the like at that time. And I found the dishes boring. Although they would give you results, they would 100% give you results. For me, a person who loves food and loves cooking, didn't fill my needs really. So I kind of just started cooking food I like to cook and stripping away some of the carbs and the fats and still trying to make it really interesting to cook and tasty at the same time.
Do you feel like an emphasis on health means that you have to sacrifice a certain emphasis on indulgence, or have you found a way to straddle both?
I think you can do both. Let me use an example here because I'm going to waffle on for about 16 years with this question. So an example is when I was writing this book, I had two friends around. One is the huge meat lover. He's like, give me a 600-gram steak, man. I'm a happy guy. And he came around for dinner with his missus, who's also give me an 800-gram steak. And I cooked three courses when I was test cooking from the new book. I didn't tell them what we're having. We had a salmon dish in there. We also don't eat much meat at home, actually, at all. Anyway, I cooked three dishes from there, and I found ways of doing things like soups. For example, I did a parsnip soup for the new book, and traditionally they would put cream or creme fraiche to enrich in that through there. I did none of that at all. I just cooked it with basically basic mirepoix, onion, carrot, celery, bay leaf, yada, 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 parsnip, water, pretty much, not even stock, cooked it with a lot of love, and then enriching that with a very lightly boiled egg through there. So you get the egg yolk going through there. So you start to use natural proteins like that to enrichen rather than fats. Anyway, we got through three courses there. The whole meal ended up having a total of a tablespoon and a half of olive oil per person.
Wow.
But it was really tasty, really good stuff. So it's been a really exciting process for me to learn how to get in touch with produce and not just use fats to kind of make everything taste great.
Does that discovery then turn you inevitably into an evangelist? I mean, what are your responsibilities as a chef? Once you know this is a healthier way to do things, are you responsible to make sure that that's what you're doing for your readers and for, you know, if you're back in a restaurant at some point in the future for your diet?
Back to the corner here with that question.
I know, hard hitting.
Yeah, I don't think so, because there's everybody, as you said, eating meat or fish or choosing not to. There are choices there. And all I want us to do with this book is just put something out there that is kind of what I was brought up really eating. I was brought up eating quite small portions, 120 gram of protein for dinner, grilled meat, salad or veggies. That was it. My parents are healthy as and super trim, super low body fats. Pizza and stuff like that was a huge treat for us to have when I was younger. And I've just tried to get back to the roots of probably what we're eating 30 years ago, really, with that kind of stuff.
Simon, what about you? What do you see as the responsibility as the chef, either through your book or directly through your cooking?
Well, look, I did spend a lot of time in the glossary and introduction. Well, one, just demystifying all of the grains. People are confused between white, red, brown, quinoa, flakes, seeds, amaranth, defatted flour, seeds, you know, leaves, every bit of each plant.
There's a show in that.
Well, I'm a lentil nut, and people are confused about all the types of dals. There's crossover where one, some dals are actually chickpeas. They're not lentils. Whole, skin on, skin off, split, whole, colour of skin, whatever. What I think that I spent most time in is, I guess, debunking some of the bullshit around the green smoothie people, that a lot of food that is allegedly healthy, you can do it with no integrity. So you can have so many grams of fat, but and it looks good on the label and call it low fat, but it's really bad fat. Like, it's hydrolyzed or partially hydrolyzed palm oil.
It's like the lolly water that's cold pressed juices.
Exactly. So and stuff like that. That if you remove the fiber and the skin from something fruit-wise, it's still a fruit product, but it's not in balance for complex carbohydrates versus simple fructose. Stuff about raw honey, like a lot of honey's just glucose syrup, it's just rubbish. So trying to sort of cut through where I felt that the food industry, and I'll be frank, they do it for profit, has misled people about what's healthy, because you can produce food that on a nutritional panel and label, you know, it's kind of confirmation bias. You can make it look good, but it's not good. And then just focused on the fact that I actually believe there's a whole world of flavour in really well-grown, and we don't treat grains especially as a season, and they do have a season. You know, the new season Mount Fairy, you know, rice from the rain-fed fields, which is unhulled and only stored for 3 months, tastes 12,000 times better than something that's been siloed for 10 years and grown overseas. So just explaining, you know, and that's where I get my flavour from, is actually not in the cooking. I'm not a great chef. I'm a good shopper. I've got connections. And I say this in the intro, that being a good chef for me is like kind of hanging around dodgy, you know, back areas, handing over wads of cash to strange people, getting the good stuff. Because a lot of our good food in Australia goes overseas.
And I guess as a chef, yeah, especially when you're in a commercial kitchen one way or the other, or your own kitchen, you have a fair amount of purchasing power to kind of change the patterns that go on around you?
Well, I like to think that if you're running a restaurant and you're supporting a small single origin dairy, that you could be sending their child through school, helping educate them. But with that, I make a cautionary note in there that our endless drive or whim to have the new and the cool throws a lot of pressure on the back supply. So if I'm buying milk off a farmer and it's a small little herd on grass, a real deal, and then an article comes out saying that milk's evil because it, you know, someone's commissioned something.
Go raw.
Yeah. And then this poor guy, if I stop buying, you know, that has a massive effect. And this is what bothers me about food shows, that all of a sudden farmers are running around their paddock hacking off all of their lamb's shanks because some muppet on a show has cooked it Monday night and everyone wants lamb shanks Tuesday. Mm. The farmer can't magic this. It's great to be interested in new food and whatever, but these blips that we have, and it happened with quinoa, you know, they cause a lot of trouble.
I was having this discussion the other day about food trends, and I hate food trends. I honestly do. Don't get me wrong. I love a taco, love fried chicken, but I hate the hype that goes around it with a passion. And I kind of, you know me, I've been cooking classical Italian food, like really old school stuff. We used to have these food trends, do you think, kind of 20 years ago? I know now it's intensified through social media, but...
Come on, when quiches were all the rage, surely there were periods similarly, whether it was fondue or quiche or when rocket,
Michael,
first arrived.
They were introduced in a more organic way through immigration, that you would eat at someone's house, or you'd have a host Swedish student staying at your house and they'd tell you about fondue and your mum would dig out an old book, Margaret Fulton. I think that process is beautiful. That's culturally exchanging and learning about other people's ways and foods. And the Italian immigrants, I mean, my parents probably thought spaghetti was hugely exotic.
But so you think it's artificially forced on us?
I think it's too quick and it's market driven. And I'm with Toby. I hate it. I think that, what about the back supply? What about these poor guys that are left with a product that no one wants anymore, like what happened to Chardonnay in the early 2000s?
I'm going to totally misrepresent you now and say that I'm very pleased to have had you both roundly condemn kale on the show this morning.
That's really good. I love kale!
And thank you both for really tearing kale down. That's that's what I wanted to hear. Look, it's so nice to hear. I was going to be nostalgic and sad for the days of two fat ladies and pie in the sky and fat chefs who only thought about what went in their mouth, but it's been very nice to talk to two chefs who think beyond that, healthy of body and mind. Simon Bryant and Toby Puttick, thanks so much for coming on the show this morning.
Mark. Thanks for having us.
Simon Bryant's latest book is called Vegetables, Grains and Other Good Stuff. It's out now from Penguin Books. And Toby Puttick's latest book is called The Chef Gets Healthy, Lose the Kilos, Keep the Flavour. It's also out from Penguin Books. These are two very badly behaved men and they will go off into the day. I think they've got a flight to catch, which is convenient, because up next on Blueprint for Living, we're talking frequent flyer points. Do stick with us.